Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Sabhi brat paurusham dhamma. Vrajamano yataravihi. Durasadoti durdarsho. Bhutanam sambhavaha. Sabibrat paurusham dhamma. Vrajamano yataravihi. Durasadoti durdarsho. Bhutanam sambhavaha. Thank you. Saha hi Vasudeva Bibrat carried Paurusham pertaining to the Supreme Person Dhamma the spiritual effulgence Vrajamana illuminating Yata as Ravihi the sunshine Durasadaha very difficult even to look at difficult to understand by sensory perception Ati Durdarshaha approachable with great difficulty. Bhutanam of all living entities. Sambhavuva so he became. Positively. Translation in purport by his divine grace Srila Prabhupada. While carrying the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead within the core of his heart, Vasudev bore the Lord's transcendentally illuminating effulgence, and thus he became as bright as the sun. He was therefore very difficult to see or approach through sensory perception. Indeed, he was unapproachable and unperceivable even for such formidable men as Kamsa, and not only for Kamsa, but for all living entities. Purport. The word Dhamma is significant. Dhamma refers to the place where the Supreme Personality of Godhead resides. In the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam it is said, Dhamna svena sada nirasta kuhakam. Satyam Param Dhimahi. In the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no influence of material energy. Dhamna Swena Sada Nirasta Kuhakam. What do those words mean? Dhamna Swena. Effulgence power, really. You know, you can call it effulgence, but we're talking about his power. Sada nirasta kuhakam? Well, is no. It's a bahuvrihi, but nirasta means what? Thrown out. Kuhakam is what? What is it? More literally? Cheating. And sada? Satyam Param. He didn't become liberated. He's eternally liberated. Sada nirasta kuhakam. Satyam Param Dhimahi. We meditate on the Supreme Truth. Okay, continuing Prabhupada's purport. In the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no influence of material energy. I just read that. Any place where the Supreme Personality of Godhead is present by his name, form, qualities, or paraphernalia, immediately becomes a Dhamma. For example, we speak of Vrindavana Dhamma, Dwaraka Dhamma, and Mathura Dhamma, because in these places, the name, fame, qualities, and paraphernalia of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are always present. Similarly, if one is empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to do something, the core of his heart becomes a Dhamma. And thus he becomes so extraordinarily powerful that not only his enemies, but also people in general, are astonished to observe his activities. Because he is unapproachable, his enemies are simply struck with wonder, as explained here by the words Durasado Tidurdarshaha. The words Paurusham Dhamma have been explained by various acharyas. Sri Viraghava Acharya says that these words refer to the effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vijayadwaja says they signify Vishnu Tejas. And Shukadev says Bhagavat Swarupa. This is Shukadev, the commentator. The Vaishnava Toshani says that these words indicate the influence of the Supreme Lord's effulgence. And Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that they signify the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Dhamma's first meaning we have to take to be power. The reason why it's special to be in the holy Dham, the place, is the spiritual potency of the place. But we should not understand power in just the material sense. We want power. We are very concerned about sources of energy, power. Wars are being fought not really for ideas. There's no need to conquer another country just to make your point philosophically. Liberty, for the sake of liberty, we have to conquer a country and enslave it. It's not for the sake of liberty. It's for the sake of fossil fuels. Yeah, it's for the sake of sources of power, petroleum and other sources of energy. That's why wars are being fought nowadays. Previous time it was over land. Land was the basis of economy. Now the basis of economy is petroleum, steel, these natural resources, because we're using them up. The earth only has a certain amount of fossil fuels. Fossil fuels? Trees from the Ice Age and before, they died. Trees don't live forever. And there were natural catastrophes, so the forests were buried under rocks. And they turned into coal and petroleum, benzene, petrol. And that's our whole modern society, modern civilization, our MP3 players, our televisions, our automobiles, don't work unless we have this fossil fuel. You may think that your MP3 player works on a couple of AA batteries. That's okay, but it can't be manufactured. Your batteries can't be manufactured without these fuels. This is power. This is the modern concept of power. Wars are fought over it. Whole civilizations rise and fall on who has the power. And individuals And man becomes powerful because he makes billions of dollars, you know, speculating, digging oil wells. And he becomes president of the United States on the strength of that power. That's material power. It is the power to exploit and utilize for sense gratification. That's not what is meant by the Supreme Lord's power. Of course, he also dominates. He's also the proprietor of everything, just like the man who owns the big petroleum company. If he owns 40% of the stocks, then he's major proprietor. Krishna is also Sarvalokamaheshwaram. He's the proprietor of all the worlds, 100% of the stock of everything. Yeah. And Brahma may be the chairman of the board, but he owns 100% of the stock, so he doesn't have to come to the meetings of the board of directors of the universe. He's behind the scenes. He owns the whole. He just has to pick up his phone and say, do this, and everybody does it. Krishna is the supreme proprietor. And therefore, that's real power. But that material power is only a perverted reflection of his real power, his spiritual power. And we, as devotees, should give up our interest in Krishna's material power. We can use it for his service. We can use it for preaching. We use automobiles to go out and preach. And we also have to put petrol in our tanks. But I don't think we should go out and, you know, fight wars over petrol or build, you know, islands in the middle of the artificial islands in the middle of the ocean to dig down to the bottom of the sea to get our petrol. We just sell some books, collect some money, and buy some petrol with the money. That's all. Preach. We don't need to endeavor separately for material power, either directly or indirectly. Just preach, and Lakshmi will fly in the window, Prabhupada's, you know, advice was. Just preach. Because our business is with spiritual power, not material power. And we don't want to dominate, unless we're in the mood of Ravana. We should not want to dominate that spiritual energy. We want to be dominated by it. Daivihi esha gunamayi. That's not the right verse. Mahatmanas tu maham parita daivim prakriti mashrita. The devotees are very much interested in Krishna's power, but they're interested in taking shelter of that power. The supreme Shakti. Shakti is power. Srimati Radharani may be a sweet girl, but she's the supreme power. You know, she doesn't have to, you know, lift weights and build muscles to show her power. She is the supreme power. All she has to do is whisper to her sakis, who are the supreme powers also. They're the direct expansions of the supreme power. And then the demigods and all the universe follow their order. You know, these are the supreme Shaktis. And we are meant to take shelter of them. Daivim prakritim ashritaha. Those who do this, it's a simple shift of attitude, but it's very hard to do because we're very stubborn. We are not convinced that we should do this. We think it's in our interest to maintain attachment to the material energy, to keep on trying to exploit and enjoy materially. In not so obvious ways sometimes. We're following the regulative principles. We're living, you know, relative to the people we live with. We may be living, say, in Germany, and our neighbors are, you know, eating sausages and drinking beer and watching television all night and engaged in illicit sex. And we think we're much better than them because we're not eating sausages and we're not engaging in these illicit activities. But there are subtle forms of sense gratification also. We're also living in a cozy house, driving two cars, and maybe going to movies once in a while. And we're also involved in subtler, less obnoxious forms, but also entangling forms of sense gratification. We're still thinking about our career, our position in society. And therefore, we haven't yet really made the transition from trying to control, we haven't fully made the transition yet, from trying to control the external energy to simply taking shelter of the divine spiritual potency. We're all, to some degree or other, still got one foot or two, to some extent, still stuck in the mud of illusion. You know, we're in, you know, somewhere in the middle of the spectrum between complete materialism and complete surrender. And therefore, we have to focus our attention on our prime business of taking giving up our dependence on Maya and taking shelter of the divine potency. The whole is a different mode of operation. Stop being the exploiter and be used. Let's not say exploit, but put yourself to use. Make yourself useful for Krishna and his divine potencies. That's what ISKCON is a good facility for. If you want to make a lot of money, maybe it's better made outside of ISKCON. You know, being a temple president or a GBC is not the best way to make a lot of money. You know, maybe you can make some money on the side, but you know, if you're going to do the full, you're going to be a full-time, you know, worker for ISKCON, you're not going to become very rich. The soldiers in boot camp are singing this chant: "You're in the army now. You're not behind the plow. You'll never get rich by digging a ditch." So you'll never get that rich by... Sorry. just by... You'll make money by sankirtan, but if you're honest about it, you won't keep the money. You may be handling lots of money as a temple president or a GBC, but you're not supposed to be putting it into your own account. Not supposed to be. So... Unless you're dishonest, you're not going to become very rich. You're not going to become materially successful in the way that you could if you were outside of ISKCON. So we should be here in this institution using it as a facility, not to gain more facility for exploitation, but we should offer ourselves to be exploited by the divine energy more and more. Gradual thing. We have to unlearn our old ways. And it's, for some of us, it's relatively easy. For some of us, we have a hard time unlearning our old ways and becoming submissive servants of Krishna's divine energy. Vasudeva is perfectly submissive, and therefore he's being empowered. He's always been empowered. Well, for many millions of years, he's been an empowered servant. He's already been the Father of God twice before, as Sutapa, and later as Kashyapa. Am I right? Sutapa, Prishni, Prishni Garba, and then Vamanadeva, and then Krishna. Yeah, Vamanadeva appears every Manvantara. So this appearance of Vamanadeva was after Prishni Garba's appearance. Because Kashyapa and Aditi are very old demigods, but this is a particular appearance of Kashyapa, of Vamanadeva in a particular Manvantara, the current Manvantara. So it's relatively recent. And the appearance of Lord Prishnigarbha was before that. Vasudeva has been a surrendered servant for a long time. He's an empowered. You have to be empowered to become the father of God. Yeah. Ordinary person can't become. So he doesn't have to make a show, but here he's showing his, that power is showing, it's coming out. He's looking so effulgent. Krishna has entered his heart. He's so effulgent that Kamsa is afraid to go near him. You know, when a person is really empowered, an evil person cannot even approach him. Kamsa may have the whole army behind him, and he knows how to use a sword himself, but he can't touch Vasudeva. Can't go near him, simply by the spiritual power of Vasudeva. And now it's showing. He's literally shining with power. All your superheroes, Shaktiman and Superman, they can't exhibit this kind of power. Yeah. It's a very, very wonderful graphic manifestation of the power of a surrendered devotee. He didn't lift a finger against Kamsa. He didn't try to incite a rebellion. He could have. He's a Yadu. He knows the arts of politics. He could have arranged for a coup d'etat, you know, against Kamsa, but he didn't try to do it. He's an honest man, and he's not inclined to crooked politics. So he's simply biding his time, because he knows that this Krishna, who is now sitting in his own heart, is going to take care of everything. There's no need to do anything separate. Just trust Krishna. He's going to take care of everything. Hare Krishna. So any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu?
You said the God lives, becomes the where the recitation of Harinam is done, that is also become a dham.
Where the recitation of Harinam is done purely, and is done purely by people who are pure. When people recite the Harinam for material purposes, professional singers and professional reciters, then that will not become a dham. Yeah, where Harinam is chanted, that's offensive chanting. Chanting for material gain. And it will not be potent, and it won't turn a place into a dham. It will actually make a dham polluted. It pollutes the dham. The sound of offensive chanting pollutes the dham. Of course, the dham cannot be actually destroyed, but it covers it with a surface of filth. Take a look outside. Look at the Parikram Marg. It's covered with filth. How is that? Because of this offensive chanting. You know, if they could enforce a turning off of all the loudspeakers, the place would become cleaner. The pollution is coming from sound. Yeah. People can be, arrangements can be made for latrines, you know, away from the Parikram Marg. But first arrangement has to be shut off the loudspeakers. So it has to be pure chanting. You know, at least unoffensive chanting. It can be, you know, maybe it's not chanting in pure love by ecstatic paramahamsas, but at least free of offenses. Yeah. If you're using Harinam and Krishna Katha just to do business, that's offensive. And it's actually polluting. Okay. Yeah. Yes, Prabhu.
Yes. Is there any difference when one is used and one is obsessed by this energy in some way?
Maybe obsessed? Yes.
Do something and don't understand
it. It's a kind of obsession. It's called avesha, shakti avesha. Avesha, you know, we talk about the empowered jiva and we call him a shakti avesha. But avesha also means becoming ghostly haunted or obsessed. So, but it's a different kind of obsession. It's a divine, you know, all good obsession. Whereas being haunted by a ghost is bad, and being haunted by a material idea. But it, what makes it good or bad is the attitude of trying to be the enjoyer and exploiter is what makes it bad. If you are haunted by an idea, even the idea of, you know, I have received the order of God. You know, you think that God is talking to you, and you're obsessed by that. But really, your motive is material because your heart is impure. Yeah. Then such a maniac is a dangerous person, a very dangerous person. He's obsessed that he's in touch with God, and God is telling him what to do. But he doesn't. He's getting misdirected. It's actually his own mind that's talking to him, in the name of, you know, supposedly God, but it's his own deluded mind. And such a man is the most dangerous. He can destroy millions of other people. People like Rasputin and others, you know, they're really dangerous. So that's obsession. That's material obsession, because the person is materially motivated. His whole mode of thinking is to exploit. If a person is submissive to at least has the idea to try to submit to the will of God, and will listen to God's representatives, his actual devotees, then that attitude can be modified, it can be transformed into an attitude of service. With a service attitude, obsession is good. Without it, it's dangerous.
Should one go into this more and more kind of obsession gradually?
Yes, but not. Our method is not to try to become a directly obsessed by Krishna. We should become obsessed by the idea of Guru Seva. Our obsession should be to Guru Mukha Padma Bhakya, Chitete Koriya Aikya, Arna Koriya Manayash. That should be our fanaticism. Is that the instructions of my spiritual master, I should place them in my heart, and I should not harbor in my heart anything that's contrary to the opinions of my guru. But that becomes bad because our Shikshu Guru is Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas of the Gaudiya Sampradaya, ultimately the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If we put an idea in our heart that's contrary to the desires and the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then that's bad. So that's a bad obsession. We should be obsessed with receiving the pure instructions of Upadesha of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and becoming useful for the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as guided by, as directed by his pure representatives. And if we're members of ISKCON, then our main representative of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Srila Prabhupada. So we have to be faithful to Prabhupada and his mission and his opinions and desires. So that's the obsession we should have, the obsession of serving the Guru and the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But we shouldn't become, we can also be in danger of becoming fanatics. We can have a sentimental attachment to the person who's initiated us and disrespect for other Vaishnavas at the same time. And not be actually following our guru, just making a show of it. You can use your guru for self-aggrandizement. That's guru boga. My guru is very powerful. I want to be powerful too. I'm gonna be very attached to my guru and absorb a lot of that power. But then at the same time you're committing Vaishnava aparad right and left. So that's not actually following guru. It can be misused. But appropriate attachment. The service of Guru and the mission of Prabhupada, that is the obsession we should be developing. We should become fanatic about that, totally obsessed. Then we'll be successful. But not just use Prabhupada's mission for our own agenda. Put aside all our own ideas and simply make the whole idea of our life to serve Prabhupada's mission. Then our life will be totally, quickly successful. We only have a few years. Some of us may be in our 20s, some of us may be in our 70s, but we all have just a few years. Some of us have a few more than others. And we should use those few years to be useful for Prabhupada's mission. That should be our obsession. We can keep a cool head about it. We shouldn't be hot-headed. We should be cool, in a cool-headed way, be obsessed.
Sir, Prabhupada was from Gaudiya Math.
Yes.
What he got, it is because of the Gaudiya Math.
Yes, yes.
Then how he went separate to Gaudiya Math and created his own ISKCON?
Because the Gaudiya Math, as an institution, the Gaudiya Math became dysfunctional. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as Prabhupada explains, gave the order that they should maintain unity, that they shouldn't try to appoint one person to be the Acharya, but they should have a governing body like we have a GBC. The original GBC was established by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati before he passed away to govern the Gaudiya Math. And he told them, don't try to appoint one person as Acharya. That person will appear later on. You're not ready for that. You just work cooperatively. And they failed to work cooperatively. The Gaudiya Math split up into small mutts, each with their own one Acharya. They tried to have one Acharya of the whole mutt. He fell down. He left the mission. They appointed one Acharya, and he decided that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is not bona fide. So the whole mission was ruined from that. So the Gaudiya Math was ruined by not following the order. Not that every individual was bad, but the institution was ruined by not following the order of the guru. Therefore, the Gaudiya Mutt is not the original Gaudiya Mutt anymore. It's all a bunch of little, you know, little organizations, and it's not what Bhaktisiddhanta wanted it to be. Therefore, Prabhupada had to leave. It was impossible to do effective preaching in such a situation. He tried to work with his godbrothers, and they wouldn't let him preach. They wouldn't let him do anything substantial, so he had to go off by himself because no one would help him. He came to him. He never had the idea to make a schism, to reject the Gaudiya Mutt, but he had to do it on his own because nobody encouraged him and nobody helped him. So he came by himself to America and established a new institution because the Gaudiya Mutt was already dysfunctional, practically defunct. You know, now it's existing as you go to Mayapur, there are 30 different mutts, 20 different mutts on the same road. That's not what Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati wanted it to be. Just as if we had 20 different ISKCONs. You know, we divide up the Mayapur land into 30 parts, and then each acharya has his own institution. That's not what Prabhupada wants. He wants an organization that sticks together and does something effective. If ISKCON was split into 30 different organizations, completely independent, it would lose its power. And that's what happened to the Gaudiya Mutt. Therefore, Prabhupada had to act separately.
Gaudiya Mutt, he rejected the Gaudiya Mutt, or Gaudiya Mutt asked him...
Prabhupada never rejected, he just had to go off and do something separate. It wasn't a matter of rejecting. It was a matter of just doing the necessary.
He created ISKCON at his own.
Created ISKCON. ISKCON is not, meant to, ISKCON is not a challenge to the Gaudiya Mutt that we are the only real devotees and you're not devotees. Prabhupada told his godbrothers, you come and join us, we'll work together. You know, ISKCON is not there to destroy the Gaudiya Mutt. ISKCON is to do what the Gaudiya Mutt's not doing, that's all. Let them also do it. Anyway, I mean, so I'm probably talking generally. I'm not talking about individual, gurus and sannyasis in the Gaudiya Mutts. But the general pattern was the whole thing fell apart, and it's not a unified movement anymore. There is no one Gaudiya Mutt, and all these small Gaudiya Mutts cannot do so much. They can only pick off the remnants off of Prabhupada's plate. They can pick off devotees from ISKCON, and now they're making some new people. But let's see what kind of people they turn into, what kind of powerful devotees they're creating. Anyway, it's friendly competition now. They wanted to do separate, and we're doing separate. If there's a competition, it's still a friendly competition. Just like a family may have a family business, the business may split up, like just Chokumba booksellers. They have two, they'd split into two companies, but they're not out to destroy each other. It's friendly competition. Friendly competition. The Gaudiya Mutt is not our enemies.
In the changing world, there is always change going on in everything.
Right, but we shouldn't make the change of not following the Guru's order. Guru gives an order, that shouldn't change. Yeah, and we shouldn't change it. We shouldn't turn ISKCON into ISKCON has to remain unified. Prabhupada wanted ISKCON to be governed by GBC, we should continue to do that. Not appoint one acharya. I don't think that's what Prabhupada wants us to do now. Appoint one person as acharya of ISKCON. Not yet. Okay. Hare Krishna. Anything else? Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.